and welcome to another episode of Walking the Field. It is Friday night when me and Alex here are knocking out another episode for y'all. First of all, thank you to everyone who is listening, tuning in, and subscribing. You know, rate 5 stars. Listen to as much as you can. We make like a wee about a bit of money here. So we're trying to, you know, get our capital gain here and just get as much as possibly can. We're recording this on Friday night. We are enjoying ourselves. But there is a lot going on in the last week, at least before the bowl games, of regular season college football. Before we get too deep into it, Alex, welcome back to Texas, even though I'm not from Texas. I don't know why I'm welcoming you back to it. But you're back home. Tell me a little bit about the trip. How are you feeling? What's going on?
It was very exciting. You know, nothing like driving a whole 12 hours home and then going right into recording a nice hour plus long podcast. Love that. But, you know, I do it for the fans. That's what I do this for. And we're here and we've got some great, you know, that's really why we are doing this at night and not in the morning, so we could do the three conference championship games that are currently going on right now. But that was because I was on the road. You know, I had my last final yesterday. You know me, I aced it, secured not getting a C, which was pretty nice. So, we got a couple games going on right now. We've got the Conference USA Championship and the Pac-12 Championship. Those are the two most notable games. We've also got the MAC Championship going on right now, and a couple of upsets brewing. Again, we'll kind of keep you a semi-updated throughout the podcast. But right now we've got UAB leading Marshall with 2:52 to go in the fourth quarter, 22-13. So potential upset right there with the Blazers. And then we also have Oregon leading USC beginning of the third quarter, 21-14. And then finally, in the MAC championship, we do have Buffalo taking on Ball State. And Ball State currently with the lead, 38-28. And from what I understand, again, I've been on the road all day, but from what we understand, it looks like Buffalo's star running back, Jarrett Patterson, has gone down. And so that's obviously a big blow to that Buffalo team, as he is a substantial portion of their offense. But now, just to kind of look to the future, Jerry, we've got, I think, two special games we want to talk about tomorrow that are not conference championships, but that's just because we like talking about them. Of course, one being Texas A&M versus Tennessee. This game, normally, you know, I like to talk a lot about Texas A&M, but we're going under a little bit of a time constraint because I'm very tired, and this game should not be a good game. A&M needs to beat Tennessee by a nice little margin. They typically play more of a ball control game. They need to beat Tennessee by a lot to give themselves the final consideration to see if maybe they can sneak into the playoffs. Of course, they are number 5 in CFP. Jerry, is there anything you really want to add on this? Jerry Pruitt potentially could save his job with a win here.
Well, if the Texas A&M loses this game, I'm not sure if we're going to do another podcast until we go back to Columbia, because you're going to be pissed.
Right.
But outside of that, really, it's just going to be interesting how this game goes. Texas A&M's a team that kind of puts teams in the meat grinder. They're not going to necessarily drop 60 on a lot of people's heads. I'm not sure if they'll do that in Tennessee. Even if they're not the super style point team that we've become accustomed to with a lot of these contending teams. I'm just going to be interested in how it goes, right? I probably won't watch it. I can almost assure you I probably won't. But if Tennessee's getting ragdolled, it'd be really interesting to see Jeremy Pruitt in his future. I think that's what's the most important aspect of this. And if Texas A&M somehow pulls like Vanderbilt but doesn't close, that would be not good. Not too much from this, though. Just everything is set for A&M to do what they need to do. We just hope they do. The other game we want to talk about, this one's a weird game. I think this is probably a way more interesting game, but it's happening at the wrong time. Is Mizzou versus Miss State. The reason this game is interesting, right, is like everyone's like really now kind of weirdly high on Mizzou. Everyone's like, oh yeah, they're winning season. They've done really well for themselves, and they could do this. And everyone's really low on Mississippi State, and rightfully so. They're not doing their job right now. They're not winning games. They don't have guys on the roster at the moment. This is going to take time. Alex, you've talked a bit about Mike Leach. It takes a little bit of time for him to really get the guys in for the air raid. But like, the air raid's the air raid, and like Mizzou's not like that good. They're not bad. But they're not like, oh, yeah, they cannot half-ass this game and win. And it's just going to be super interesting to see Mizzou's defense, who's decent pass defense, but not amazing. This is one of those games is Vegas has this kind of like a pick-em, is what I've heard. I think that's really just interesting. It's a weird game. I wish this happened earlier in the season, not the 19th, because everyone's talking about the conference championships, and rightfully so. This is a very interesting game, and as a Mizzou fan, it's, you know, as we cover Mizzou, it's gonna be very interesting to see how this game turns out. And you know, I don't really know what to look for. This is not a explosive Mizzou offense versus a team that's built to be explosive but has failed. weird game. That's all I can really say.
Yeah, well, really, I think the matchup that's most interesting in this game is on the one hand with Mizzou's defense. You've got a defense that has very much struggled to take the ball away this year versus a team that turns it over a ton. I mean, you look at the quarterback play so far, and granted, Will Rogers the last couple of weeks has been significantly better. You know, I believe he's only got one turnover in the last three games, but still, they've thrown 16 total interceptions, and they're averaging nearly a fumble per game on top of that as well. Mizzou, in order to win this game, I mean, they're going to need, I mean, it's the same strategy as always. You know, they need to be efficient, establish the ground game with Roundtree, mix in some short passes. Again, Baselak has been very good this year. I mean, he's been very efficient, and really, I mean, that's how Will Rogers needs to play for Mississippi State tomorrow. He needs to not turn the ball over and distribute it to his wide, you know, to his wide swath receivers, get Jaquavius Marks going in the receiving game out of the backfield. That's been probably the most effective thing for Mississippi State this season is finding running backs, you know, guys like Marks, like Dylan Johnson, like Kylan Hill when he was still playing. I mean, Jaquavius Marks out of the backfield leads the Bulldogs in receptions with 53. And also, you know, he also has 214 yards as well, and a total, you know, he has a rushing touchdown as well. And so I really think that it's going to be which defense is able to force some turnovers, because Mizzou's offense, on the other hand, does not turn the ball over all that much. Had a rare couple turnovers last week, but typically a very solid team, very good at holding onto the football. And I think that if Mizzou's able to generate a turnover or two against Mississippi State, that will definitely help them. I favor Mizzou in this game, but I think it's going to be closer than some people think.
Yeah, and it's just a weird game, a weird matchup. Again, I wish this game would have happened earlier in the season, just so we could have proper attention to it. I think this was not championship week, this would be a really fun game to watch. I still might watch it anyways. But let's get into it. You already know why it's here. It's the final week of the regular season. Championship games are around the corner and happening right now and going to be happening tomorrow. First one on the docket for Saturday. Well, there's two at the same time. The first one we're going to talk about and just kind of get through. Number 14, Northwestern versus number 4, Ohio State, 11 a.m. on Fox. This is a game that, you know what? Just get it over with. Get it over with, okay? Northwestern, they've had a good run. They've done their job. I know they're not the greatest of teams, but hey, they've won games, and they've won the games in a really painful fashion, which is score once or twice and just hold teams down. Like, they held down Wisconsin. They held down Iowa to 20 points and beat them by 1 point. It was a 21-20 game. This is not a Northwestern team that is going to drop 40 or 50 on anybody's head. You could probably drop them into a D2 or D3 team, and they still wouldn't drop 50 on their head. This is not a scoring offense by any means. Ohio State, on the other hand, the exact opposite. Ohio State will get scores. Their passing defense, a little suspect, but who's not going to take advantage of that? Probably not Northwestern. Like, Northwestern's passing game has been somewhat abysmal. They've been competent, but like leaning towards abysmal. I don't like this game. I think it's a weird game. I'm happy for Northwestern. Shout out to Illinois, right? Just making the University of Illinois look worse every week. Alex, is there anything like meaningful you want to add to this outside of the fact that like Ohio State's basically going to secure their playoff spot unless they get like screwed?
Yeah, I mean, and you can debate the merits of that all they want. I know a lot of people have been saying, well, you know, how could we only let in a team that's played 5 games and they've all been against bad teams? I think that's a valid point, but you look at it, Ohio State has dominated. They have not just won, they have dominated every team they've played except for Indiana. That was the only game that was not complete domination. And Indiana's a really good team. Even now playing with a backup quarterback, they've still been able to pull out wins, which is very impressive. And it's why their coach, I think, is in the, you know, very much in the running for the Big Ten Coach of the Year. Northwestern, they have a very balanced offense. You can give them credit for that. Unfortunately, their balanced offense only leads to about 350 yards a game. And they do force turnovers on defense. If they're able to turn Justin Fields over a little bit, Fields did have a little bit of a rough game. I believe it was against Indiana, threw 3 interceptions in that one. Northwestern is going to need a lot of that. But at the end of the day, Jerry, the spread going into tomorrow for Northwestern and Ohio State is looks like 20 points in favor of Ohio State. And that's for a reason. I mean, Ohio State is just playing a completely different game than the rest of the Big Ten, running a very wide open spread, high octane offense. It's definitely going to be very much an offense versus defense. And you know me, I always favor the offense, and especially when it's Ohio State's offense in this case.
Yeah, no, Ohio State's just on a different level. It feels like when we just talk about the big, they're not even part of the Big Ten damn near. They're like an extension of the SEC. It feels like just like as a team that's just very, very good. And just a side note, Tom Allen, the head coach of Indiana, did win Coach of the Year, Big Ten Coach of the Year. So I just wanted to throw that in there to help you out. Deservedly so. Tom Allen is a great coach. On the other hand, now, the more interesting game, one that I really want to hear what you're thinking, Alex, is the Big 12 championship. This one has a lot of weird ramifications, and it became really weird because right now you have number 10, Oklahoma, versus number 6, yes, number 6, Iowa State. This is why this game is so weird. First of all, Iowa State has had a great season, headed by Matt Campbell, Breece Hall. You have all, you know, oh, I forgot the quarterback, Brock Purdy. There you go. How did I forget Brock?
Your man.
Very fun core. And they beat Oklahoma earlier in the year. But then Oklahoma decided to be Oklahoma again and score. Spencer Rattler's really turned his game around. And their defense has become competent enough to now, when they drop 50 points, they're stopping the other team to get 34 points. Doing what they got to do. This is, you know, this is Big 12 for the reason. Like, this is a really good game. This is the most important 11 o'clock game by a mile. Like, if you're watching the Big Ten Championship, you're my dad. Like, that's why you're watching it. So I'm very interested in this game. I think Oklahoma's the better team. I think Oklahoma has a better chance. But if there's any person who cares about narrative between the two of us, it's me. I love how Iowa State has kind of came out the mud. You know, this was a laughing stock in the Big 12 that's really worked it around. Matt Campbell's really brought this program around, the idea of this is five-star tradition, not five-star talent. And, you know, personal interest here. Iowa State just signed a three-star linebacker from my high school, Aiden Ralph. Want to give him a shout out. Great kid. So of course I want to see kids from my state and kids from my high school succeed and their programs do well. Iowa State's done everything right to be in this position. I want to give them their credit. Oklahoma is more of the sitting power, and I like to seeing it's not David versus Goliath, I would say, but it kind of has that kind of feel, like, you know, just the team, Oklahoma, that's always been there, and Iowa State's just getting up there. And this is, I'm not sure if you're going to see Iowa State here next year, you know, so I want Iowa State to win, but my heart tells me Iowa State. My brain tells me Oklahoma. Alex, what are you thinking?
I can tell you that this game, I feel like, is going to end up making me mad, because I think that there's going to be one of two things will happen. Either Iowa State is going to win, and as a two-loss conference champion, are somehow going to jump into the playoff picture, which I think is not deserved. All right, they lost to a Sun Belt team by 31-14. Unacceptable. I don't care if the Sun Belt team was Louisiana. Louisiana did not win the Sun Belt championship. That point is null. If it was an undefeated Louisiana team that was ranked 13th, maybe I get it. Louisiana just knocked them off. Iowa State did not play well in that game. And then they lost to a, I would say, probably the worst 7-3 team in the country in Oklahoma State. They lost to Oklahoma State with a backup quarterback, with a third-string quarterback, as a matter of fact. I mean, Oklahoma State is just, they have not been a good team. They've definitely faded down the stretch. And somehow, after those two egregious losses, in my opinion, they are one spot behind Texas A&M, whose one loss was to Alabama in week two of the season, right? I just look at those. And so I feel like if they win, somehow the committee, which has already made some incredibly questionable decisions, to say the least, one, dropping Cincinnati in consecutive weeks and promoting the likes of a two-loss Iowa State team. Congratulations, you lost to a Sun Belt team. Again, Cincinnati hasn't done that. Cincinnati hadn't lost to anyone. So, you know, that's how I feel about that. And then because there's such an Oklahoma bias, I almost feel like Oklahoma could jump into the playoff picture too, because now, oh, they've got a win over Iowa State and the champion. Who cares? All right, they're a two-loss team and did not play well in the beginning of the season. And I think that I think that this game has a lot of potential ramifications that I do not want to see happen. So, you know me, I'm kind of angry about this. Although I will say Iowa State, I think, has the best overall player in Breece Hall. So I do favor the Cyclones in this one, because he has been an elite running back this year. He has really shouldered the load and has taken some of the load off Brock Purdy. I mean, you saw Brock Purdy trying to do a little bit too much in that first game against Louisiana, but after really settled down and has played a nice season. But I hope that the committee sees these two-loss teams and realizes that neither of these teams beat a team with less than three losses, and doesn't put them in, because I think that there isn't a team from the Big 12. I don't think that there is any team in the Big 12 that is on the level of an Alabama, even a Clemson, a Notre Dame, an Ohio State. I don't think that there's one that's on that level. I think that if either one of these two teams plays anyone in the top five or Cincinnati, I don't think they win. I don't think they could beat any of the six teams. So that's just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, and I share some of your frustrations. I'm only, you know, and we could talk about the playoff picture. I think we'll save, I'll save a little bit at the time of the end. We are in a time crunch. But yeah, this game has weird, like I said, has weird ramifications. I thought the Big 12 played themselves out of the playoff by beating on each other. But hey, this is 2020, the playoff committee, stupid, what's new? A game that could have actually helped our playoff picture a little bit would have been the Sun Belt Championship, right? But that has been canceled. Really sad. Louisiana has been suffering COVID issues that knocked out a position group that was not specified, at least the last time I looked. Really, that was a game I was looking forward to, just because that, I really wanted to see Coastal have one more shot at Louisiana, and Billy Napier is in the SEC right now, basically, when it comes to coaching hunt or the job searches. I've heard his name tied with Auburn, right, because it's Billy Napier. He's going to probably end up in one of these SEC jobs in 3 years. And Jamie Chadwell has just been insane, and Coastal's been our feel-good story. I wanted to give them one more shot. That would have been a really good game. Sad it's not being played. But a game that would be played 30 minutes after what was supposed to be the Sun Belt Championship, the most important game of the night, number 3 Clemson versus number 2 Notre Dame in the ACC Championship. This, you know, we're talking about the Big 12's ramifications. This game has the ultimate decider, I think, of what everything else goes through. I think there's 3 possible paths, right? So if Clemson wins big, I still somehow, like, if Clemson wins big, Notre Dame gets knocked out. Just maybe. But if they get smacked, I'm saying 4 touchdowns, not 3, 4 touchdowns, they get out. I think 3 or less would be close enough. I think they stay in. If Notre Dame wins, Clemson's out. If Notre Dame wins big, Clemson's out anyways. So I think that's the 3 realistic scenarios that would shuffle everything else. This is why, and a lot of people were like, oh, yeah, Clemson in. I want to push back on that a little. Not crazy amount. I think Clemson obviously was missing pieces when they went to South Bend and went into double overtime, I think it was, or at least they went, you know, extra time and lost. They were missing their starting quarterback. They were missing defensive pieces. But Notre Dame has proven outside of this Clemson game that they are a very good team. I don't see this game being a knockout punch from Clemson, even if it's mad Clemson. This is not a bad Notre Dame team. They deserve their credit. They are undefeated for a reason. Even with that, I think Clemson will come out mad. They'll show why they deserve to be in the playoff. I like Clemson in this one, but not by as much as I think. I think this could be a 1 or 2 score game. And if that's the case, I could see both these teams still being in the playoff because they've had 2 pretty close games. And like, there's a relevant reason to pick both sides. Alex, I know you don't want me to tell you that because you want Clemson to get smacked so that Texas A&M can hopefully sneak in. I know that's how you're feeling a little bit inside, but I think at least there is an opportunity for this to be another really good game. I hope it's a really good game. I can see it being a really good game. What are you feeling?
I mean, I think you're mostly right on that. I think that I agree. I think that if Clemson loses by any margin, they are out. I don't think that they can afford to lose this game. A 2-loss team with no conference championship, that's like Iowa State or Oklahoma, but worse, right? I get it that their 2 losses were to Notre Dame, but they lost to them twice. And the second time, they have no excuse. The first time, you could say, well, they didn't have Trevor Lawrence. And again, I will contend into my grave that the quarterback play in that game did not lose that game. The defense did. But, you know, I digress. We've talked about this. And like I said, I'm trying to keep this so I can go to bed. Keep this nice and short. Notre Dame, I think that if Notre Dame keeps this game within 2 scores, being 14 points, I think if it's within 14 points, I think that even if they lose, they probably get in. If it is above that, I think that they do not. I think if Clemson wins by more than by 2 touchdowns or more, I think that Notre Dame's out. Because I think that really will highlight to the committee that Notre Dame won that first game because Clemson was playing its reserves. And so I think that will not be able to hold up. One thing to note, Clemson's defense, after being thrashed by Notre Dame for 47 points, has given up 27 points in the last 2 weeks. Granted, it was against Pitt and Virginia Tech, but one thing that's promising is Virginia Tech, a very good running team, was shut down pretty nicely by the Clemson defense, and Clemson really, that's what I think beat them. I think the fact that Notre Dame was able to establish that run game, get Ian Book in rhythm with the play action game, I think that was something that was huge in the first week. And if they're able to limit that, again, I'm not super high on Ian Book as a quarterback, and so I think that if you make Ian Book beat you, I think you'd be hard pressed to see Ian Book beat you two times in a row, especially without being able to rely on that run game. So I like Clemson in this game. I think the spread is 10 points. The last time that I saw, which would have been last night, I think it's a 10-point spread in this game in favor of Clemson. Notre Dame, the underdog, the largest underdog, I think, like for a team that had already played the team like in history or something like that. I remember reading that on ESPN. But it's gonna be a solid game. It's gonna be one that I think that, especially, the team, the Iowa States, the A&Ms, they're gonna be watching it because they played 11. They're gonna go back to that locker room after a win, and they are going to be praying that Notre Dame wins this game. Because if Notre Dame wins, like I said, I don't think that the committee, even with an extreme Clemson bias, I don't think the committee can keep Clemson in with two losses. I just don't think. I think there's too many good one-loss teams, and I mean, heck, there's even some good undefeated teams that, aren't getting a look, and we're going to give a team that lost to the same team twice, the second time being with its full accompaniment of players. I just don't really buy that. So I think that Clemson, of course, this is a must-win game, but Notre Dame, I think that they most certainly punch their ticket if they keep this, especially if they keep it within the spread, 10 points. I think they punch their ticket to the college football playoff regardless and leave out an Iowa State, a Texas A&M, a Cincinnati. I think they're getting left out.
Yeah, it's a weird game that could have a lot of ramifications. It's the ultimate decider of what every other team does. So I think that's super interesting. Game that doesn't have as much merit, but it's still, I think, it's an interesting game. We're not going to talk too much about it. Mountain West Championship, Boise State versus number 24, San Jose State. It's just going to be interesting. If you want to, this is the one chance for a lot of guys to really see San Jose State. If it Clemson Notre Dame were to this not, live up to the expectations, I might have this on a second screen or third screen. This would not be a first screen game, obviously. But Brett Brennan is going to be in the talks for some coaching jobs as well. He's done a great job there. Boise State, they're Boise State. I don't really have much else. I think they're healthy. And I think that's all that really matters, right?
Yeah. I mean, Boise State, I mean, the one game that I remember that, of course, was heavily covered by us was, of course, the game against BYU, where they ended up not having their first or second string quarterback in that game. It kind of went downhill from there. BYU won that game fairly easily. So yeah, definitely a little bit of an off year. But I mean, if there was ever a year to have an off year, it's this one. I think kind of, it's just been an off year in general. They've been hit by the virus, of course. But San Jose State, a very nice story, much like Coastal Carolina, a nice story of a team that last year was a little bit more on the come up, but 2 years ago was terror. I think they were 1-11 2 years ago, and now are competing in the Mountain West Championship. They've got former Texas A&M and Arkansas quarterback Nick Starkel piloting the ship, and he's really found himself really in his last season at San Jose State.
Yeah, San Jose State, great story, fun to talk about, but probably won't watch this game or have it on a second screen. Last two games we have to get to, the 7 p.m. games, the night games for a reason. The first one being, both these games have a lot of importance. They're actually very interesting, and they're all right. I'm glad that even college football, which knows how to mess everything up, knew which games to put on and win. The SEC Championship, number 1 Alabama versus number 7 Florida. There's a lot going on that doesn't even pertain to this game, right? First of all, you have like Mac Jones and Devontae Smith, who are now getting a lot of Heisman buzz, and rightfully so. And on the other side, Florida, the shoe game absolutely destroys. You would think it would destroy their opportunity at competing for the CFP. Nope, they drop one spot because losing to an LSU team that, lost to like half the teams. Oh, yeah, Miss State, Missouri, just kind of on that list. Nah, not a big loss. We expected it. No, this is an absolute one of these reasons why even whatever happens in this game, whatever happens to Florida, even they get thrashed, people are going to look at the playoff committee this week, and they've done it so rightfully so, and said, what the hell are you doing? What is going on here? Nobody knows what's going on. The game itself, how can you bet against Alabama right now? They look like the Patriots when they were in their prime. You don't bet against them, okay? Their offense, great. What is Florida not good at? Pass defense. What can Alabama do in bunches? Pass the ball. This is a prime setup moment. This game could only be close if it turns into a shootout. But I'm going to pose this question to you, Alex, because I want to see what you think on this. Florida were to pull the upset on Alabama, do you put them in to the CFP?
I don't really like talking because I don't think that there's any universe in which that happens. I still don't think that I do, because I think that at that point, if they beat Alabama, and I know in the last episode I said, you know, any team that beats Alabama should be in, but I think, but of course that was after the LSU loss. That is a terrible loss for Florida. That is absolutely horrific. The fact that they lost to LSU, I think, sunk them. They need to beat Alabama by a considerable margin. I mean, I would put they would need to win by, again, it'd probably be about two scores on Alabama, which I think that there's some NFL teams that wouldn't be able to do that against Alabama, that couldn't beat Alabama by two scores. So it's a very tall task, but I just think, again, I look at the CFP poll and they'd have to jump. This is why I don't think it would happen. Because they would have to jump, and this is assuming Iowa State does win the Big 12 championship. If they don't, that obviously increases their chances by a lot to get in. But I just don't see how they could jump Iowa State and A&M and Ohio State or Clemson or Notre Dame. I don't think they could jump all of them. Jump one of them, maybe. But jump all of them, I just don't really see it. I mean, A&M has the head-to-head win. They are going to end the season on a win. And you're looking at if A&M is in their position, you know, if A&M's in the East Conference, which is considerably weaker, they're in the championship this week too, right? So I just don't know. And that, I mean, again, that's a little bit of A&M bias. But I think that Georgia, or Florida, that would be, I think that Florida really threw away their chances at the playoffs last week when they tossed that shoe. I think that, you know, that was a metaphor of their playoff chances in that regard, because I just don't think that you can come back from that. Because again, that LSU loss, just to put it in context, I mean, they're a team currently with a losing record even after winning that game. They currently sit at 4-5 after beating Florida. And those losses, just again, to remind the folks at home, Mississippi State, terrible. Missouri, better than we expected. South Carolina they actually beat. They lost to Auburn, who just fired their coach. They lost to Texas A&M, of course. And they lost to Alabama very badly. So, I just look at all of those teams. And, again, Texas A&M didn't look amazing against LSU. I mean, that was probably the worst game Kellen Mond has played in his career. But they won 20-7. It was a shutdown performance by the defense. Florida's defense, on the other hand, gave up, 34 points? Something like that? To an LSU team that, again, has super struggled to score and use the backup quarterback, in fact, in that game. So I think that's a really bad look, because again, it wasn't even like they were using their starting quarterback. I mean, they started a guy for the first time ever and they lose 37-34. I just think that's a bad performance. And if LSU is going to put 37 on them, Alabama might score 100. Florida, so far this season, has really struggled. Not only have they struggled moderately against the pass, as we saw in week one, that was actually LSU that struggled against the pass, but what beat Florida in that A&M game was the rushing attack. And A&M has a really good rushing attack, but I think that even, you know, even the people that live in my house that went to A&M would say that Najee Harris is probably, from a talent perspective, better than Isaiah Spiller. And if they couldn't contain him with Texas A&M's line, and granted, Texas A&M's line has been fantastic this year. Alabama also has a very good line and has an equally, if not more, talented running back. I don't understand how that you mix that in with a Heisman with multiple Heisman candidates on the, you know, with Devontae Smith and Mac Jones. Even Najee Harris is getting a sniff because he leads all FBS running backs with 22 rushing touchdowns this season. Florida's going to have their hands full, and for that reason, yeah, I just don't think that there's any way that they beat them unless Alabama tomorrow, you know, they have like a contact tracing problem. I mean, God forbid, that's the only way they're losing, right? Is if they have to play basically a JV team against Florida. But still, I mean, if we're talking about JV teams, I probably like Alabama's more than I like any other teams in the country.
Yeah, there's this, like, this worried me. Florida's ranking just purely worried me, because we don't have any rhyme or reason, it feels like, with the college football playoff, that if for some reason that were to happen, that Florida would just jump, because we don't understand what's going on anymore, right? If they were at,
well, yeah, because the committee has been, yeah, horrible.
That's why I asked you that question, solely because Florida was ranked in like USC territory, let's say 13, 14, all right, they're not going from 1 to 14, or you know, even going from 14 to 4, but with the way that this committee is working right now, which we'll save our groans and complaints. I'm going to save that for a little bit at the end, right? I could somehow, just because it's the committee, I'm not even going to try to give you logic, Alex, because that would be like, that would be too much sense. That makes too much sense. Florida would somehow, I think, find a way, because that's why they put them there. I also feel like the CFP committee said, we know Alabama is going to be Florida, so we'll just put them at 7, they'll lose, and we'll knock them really low. I hope that's the case. That's me thinking as a positive person, but positivity doesn't always win the world around. But in one more game that I think is also, this was going to be way more interesting if it didn't happen the way it did. Number 23, Tulsa versus number 9, Cincinnati. Tulsa's very good at just being annoying, but these guys have had like 2 weeks to prepare. Cincinnati has had like 2 weeks to prepare for Tulsa now. They didn't play last week. They could have played twice in a row. But now with like 2 weeks of preparing, I like Cincinnati just that much more. Tulsa's going to put up a fight. This is not going to be a game where I don't think Cincinnati just blows them out of the water. Tulsa's going to come out to play. They've done that all year, and they deserve this number 23 ranking. They've worked their butts off for it. But Cincinnati's just done everything right, and they now have time on their side. The sad thing is even if Cincinnati style points on Tulsa, it feels like it doesn't mean anything. Sad truth of the situation, it's just CFP, who has dropped Cincinnati from, what was it, 7th, right, to 9th? Just in consecutive weeks for no reason, because this is the CFP. Again, a team that lost to LSU is now still ranked higher than Cincinnati, because that's this year. Alex, do you have anything you want to break down on this game? Anything you're thinking about for the AAC championship?
Well, I think you're exactly right. I think the biggest crime the committee committed this season was the fact that they decided that Cincinnati was just, I don't know. I have Cincinnati's schedule up in front of me right now, and I just can't imagine how they are put this low. Because again, in the ranked games they played, they beat Army when Army was ranked 22nd by 14. They beat a UCF team that's a very good team, wasn't ranked, but beat them 36-33, only allowed 33 points. That's the most points they've allowed. Other than that game against UCF in their last time out, November 21st, the most points they've given up besides that was to Austin Peay in week one, 20 points, which was scored against their subs, right? So I look at that, and I look at a Tulsa offense that I'm not really sold on. They're a team that turns the ball over, much more so than Cincinnati. Two turnovers a game is what they're averaging, and I just don't buy their offense. I've seen Cincinnati shut down significantly better offenses this season, and I think that Tulsa's offense is not there. Their run game is mediocre. Their passing game also mediocre. I mean, it's nothing to write home about. And you've seen Cincinnati take on, again, a UCF team that's probably the best offense in the American, with the exception of Cincinnati. And you could even argue that they may be better than Cincinnati. And then you saw them shut down what was previously an electric SMU offense and a Memphis offense in consecutive weeks, allowed 23 points combined to those two teams. I don't see how Tulsa is able to muster up the offense again. They've had some weak showings, most recently against Navy in their last game on December 5th, only put up 19 points against an unranked Navy team. Also had a power outage in the first game of the season as well. That game, they lost to Oklahoma State 16-7. So again, they couldn't beat Oklahoma State when Oklahoma State's quarterback got injured in the first quarter, and they had to throw in just random guys here and there, and they still got the win. I think that against a full-strength Cincinnati team that is just blowing everyone out, again, aside from that UCF win on November 21st, their next closest game is a game against, again, a formerly ranked Army team by 14 points. That's their closest game. I think that they beat Tulsa maybe by 3 touchdowns. I think this game's not even going to be close.
It's just sad that this game feels like it doesn't mean as much as it should. I hope Cincinnati goes out and wins. There's been some talk around the internet. I think this has actually been way funnier than it could have been, is that Cincinnati and Coastal should not accept bowl games and play each other, and the winner declares themselves national champions. I love it. This is better than when UCF was trying to claim their national champions because they got really bad. Like, they're just like, we want it. Like, it was just too much. But, you know, this would be a little more fun, and I think this year, like every year, we find out that the college football playoff is not adequate enough for this. It does not have an adequate system to really understand how these teams are ranked. It's not consistent. It does not work. And any real change that is going to happen to this has to start with transparency, because we really don't understand how these teams are ranked. Not even the people outside the people who are in that room, right? And we'll end this. We'll end off on just kind of our vents and frustrations with the CFP. Outside the people in that room and Gary Barta talking to ESPN and the softball questions of ESPN, like, we don't know that much. We don't know enough. We kind of just have to guess off of these rankings. It's fun. It's fun to think of these hypotheticals. It's kind of fun to be like, oh, if Florida were to beat Alabama, what happens, right? But it's also annoying because, like, when you have 12 people just trying to tell you who is the best team in the country, you know, who are the best teams in the country, who deserves to go to this and that, you can kind of throw any line of reason out, right? Like, you can make whatever point you want in that room, and it holds way more merit than whatever other point that me or you, Alex, make on this podcast, or any writer in the national media or local write. And it's weird. You're just giving it to these 12 people and you're like, figure it out. And they don't tell us how they figure it out. They, you know, like, even when Gary Barta answers some of these questions, it's just like, oh yeah, you can see Iowa State's defense has really come along, so we think that they're really good. Oh, great. Thank you
but
for
then
telling
you, but
us
then
that.
You put them over. Yeah, and then you put them over what, like, the best defensive team in the country in Cincinnati. It makes no sense.
Like, oh, great. Thank you for this miracle explanation. Now we just totally understand the complete logic of Iowa State being number 6. Oh, Florida lost to an unranked LSU. What do you think, Gary? Well, it was a loss. But like, it's so hard to really understand some of these things. And what do you, you know, even if we ask you, or you ask the right questions, you may not get the right answer. You may not get the answer that would actually fit what's going on. There's not enough transparency in this. And I'm going to make one kind of hot take here. The big thing that's being pushed around a little bit is you have to keep expanding the playoff. Well, this is not the NCAA basketball tournament where, yes, you can put 64 teams in there, but you can also expendably play basketball games on a 2 to 3 day or 1 to 2 day break. You're not doing that with football teams. If you keep expanding the playoff, the same problem's going to happen. If you make it to 8 teams, Cincinnati's still not in it. And we're still going to barge about how Cincinnati should be one of the top 8 teams in the country. If you expand it to 12, you expand it to 16, you expand it to 20, you expand it however far you want, the same arguments could be made, but you cannot do that in the time frame that college football works in. Because the higher and farther you make the playoff, if you make it 64 teams, right? Say you wanted to say NCAA football December Madness. You can't have 64 teams play all the way through in like a month. Because football takes that much more time, and it's that much more physically taxing. And what you're going to do is you're going to take away regular season games to then make this playoff happen. And then it's just going to read into the same. Like, all it's going to do is you're going to have less data points, and we're going to complain about the 64th and 65th team. So it's not just about how many teams are in the playoff. Could you make it 8 or 12? Yes, sure. But it's who's in that room deciding who are the 12 teams. There is not a good consensus reason. And this year, the year that has no reason, has made it that much easier to really tell. That's why every year this has been weird. Every year there's something that we could have complained about. Any team ever, we could complain about not making whatever spot. We do it every year. It's about the people in that room. And we need to know what those people, the people in that room, consistently think deserves what. And we don't. And until we do not know that, it's not going to matter. I think that's my big spiel. I know I'm taking a little bit of our time, Alex. I complain about you doing it, but that's my big complaint. Any other things that you need to vent off on the CFP before we kind of end it out here?
Well, yeah. I mean, I am with extending with, and it would have caveats, obviously, extending the playoff to like 8 teams. Cause I think that it's very reasonable to say 8 teams and having at least one, you know, maybe like obviously the SEC, Big Ten, ACC, Pac-12 conference champions would all be in. And then after that, you've got 4 at-large spots. And I think because that way, I think that if there was 8 teams, I think that Cincinnati would occupy that 8th spot, especially after they win tomorrow by 3 touchdowns against Tulsa. I think that they jump up in that. And I think that if there was that possibility, I think we would see Cincinnati get a little bit more play, but with the only 4 teams. Another thing I'd like to see, and something that I literally just thought of right now, I would like to see a system of ranking wins and losses like you see in college basketball, where you've got the quad 1, the quad 2, the quad 3, and the quad 4. Right. I think that that is something that would very much help the college football playoff committee, because currently they're just making stuff up. Because again, I mean, you look at that game against with Florida and LSU. I mean, that was a home game for Florida. That was a home game against one of the worst teams in the SEC this season. And they lose. I think that, I mean, I can't imagine a worse loss than that unless they lose to like a Vanderbilt or something like that, or a Mississippi State, you know, who LSU lost to, by the way. So, you know, that's just my thing. I would like to see a quadrant system because, again, I mean, you're looking at that in basketball, that would be considered on a bracketology like resume, that would be considered a very bad loss, period. The loss against A&M, not a bad loss. It is a loss. Not, you know, that's not like, oh, you lost to A&M, so therefore we can't put you in. You lost to LSU, we cannot put you in the playoffs for that reason. You know what I'm saying? That's just my thing. I think that a system like that would definitely benefit the CFP, and it would help make it more transparent if they had somebody who ranked all the wins and adjusted them by wins and losses and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that's kind of my spiel on it. I think that's something that is very necessary, along with, I agree. I think that it would be nice to see an 8-team playoff. You've got a couple of guaranteed spots, and then you have some at-large spots for a team like Cincinnati, because Cincinnati, I think, is one of the best teams in the country this year. I mean, their defensive play, they have played against a wide swath of teams, most of which are very offensive, like SMU, Memphis, UCF. Not teams known for their defense. They're known for putting up a lot of points. I mean, Dylan Gabriel at one point was leading the FBS in passing yards because he was throwing for like 450 yards a game. He got shut down by Cincinnati. Cincinnati played a great game. SMU, one of the best offenses in the country going into week four. They play Cincinnati and get smoked 42-13 because Cincinnati's red zone defense has been elite this year. And the fact that we're not going to get to see them again, because I'm with you. I would like to see this game tomorrow against Tulsa mean more, but I just don't think that it does. I think that because the committee has dropped them in consecutive weeks, there's really no point to even watching the game because, again, I think Cincinnati's going to win very easily, and I think that that game doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's sad. And also, see, Alex, this is why I told you they should just rank Georgia lower, because now Georgia's number 8 and Cincinnati's number 9. Georgia just ruins everything. I'm tired of it. Georgia should have just been like 16th, and we should just live with it and just been on with our days. This is all Georgia's fault. Just kidding. But
Facts.
on that note, a little small tidbits of news. It looked like if I, what is it, the, we are just finishing recording up now. The MAC championship has ended. Ball State won 38-28 against Buffalo. Congratulations to Ball State for the win. And I'm not sure about any other scores right now. Alex, you want to drop the other three scores as we finish up?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just go ahead and pull it back up on my phone. It looks like Oregon still has the lead over USC 28-17. It looks like UAB gets the upset win against the Marshall Thundering Herd to close out their season as well. That score ends up being the same 22-13 score. So the Blazers end up with the Conference USA Championship. Big win right there for the Blazers, whose coach also kind of in a little, you know, low-key getting some play. I know we talked about him with the Auburn job. So yeah, again, another, you know, that's Bill Clark for UAB. He's done a very nice job at Alabama Birmingham, and of course Auburn being in Alabama, he knows the area well. Should be able to recruit, and is a really good coach, and you see that knocking off a Marshall team that ends up with a 7-2 record, just kind of falters down the stretch. The 20-0 loss versus the Rice Owls, and then getting knocked off by UAB in the Conference USA Championship. So congratulations to the Blazers. And then also just another little honorable mention, I guess, type of game that was happening today. We also had Nebraska knocking off Rutgers 28-21 in the only other action that was happening today. So Nebraska gets the win. I believe that should finish up their season at 3-5.
Yeah, shout out to both Nebraska and Rutgers having the same amount of wins, both having 3 wins at the end of the season. Rutgers just having one more loss now. Nebraska ending 3-5, Rutgers ending 3-6. Thank you, Nebraska, for bringing back Big Ten football. On that note, we're going to be signing off here. I know Alex wants to go to bed. I'm very thankful for him to make the drive all the way back home and still find time to record this because I keep nagging him to do it. And because I keep nagging him to do it, you need to subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and listen all the way through. Help us make a little bit of money because we are broke college kids and we like free money. We love doing this. But Alex, thank you for stopping by. I enjoy always talking about college football with you. We'll figure out some couple episodes. If this is our last one beforehand, I don't think it will be. But before Christmas, we wish everyone a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and Happy New Year. But we should have a little bit more out there. But this is just in case Alex goes off the deep end, because he is in Texas now. So I'm expecting you to take like a bath in fried food or something. So
I already had some fried chicken. That's what I had right before we went on. Can't lie. I had me nice three fried chicken legs. It was exquisite.
That's why you're so sleepy, because you had fried chicken at like 8 p.m. and you're trying to figure out how to live.
True.
But yeah,
got
all
me there.
This is all we got for now. We'll be back hopefully with some more. Again, thank you so much for listening. Listening to Walk in the Field, not on KCOU on Zoom because pandemics. We'll be back with you soon. Peace.